Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 29th, 2013. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a very tired, sore Scott Long.
I love this story. I've been sharing it with anyone who would listen.
Unfortunately, you don't know a lot of people, so there's probably not a lot of people listening.
That is true. I don't get out of the house. I'm a hermit. But still, if anybody calls out like a telemarketer, I'm like, you got to hear this story.
reminiscent of the famous Ante Up race for the Hundy, which galvanized listeners around the world.
That's true.
With the challenge, the beat-down challenge that you and Faso had with each other on who could beat the other one in a mile.
Yep.
We recorded that on video and everything. We had a lot of fun with it. So many people even made t-shirts for that, didn't they?
I don't know, but I loved the video, though. It had, like, Vangelis's Chariots of Fire in the background. It was great.
Some Benny Hill.
Yeah.
I could have definitely used some Benny Hill in my own little race for the Hyundai. So, my wife has been dieting for a while, and I'm very proud of her.
Yeah.
And then my father started dieting. Super proud of him. He's lost 50 pounds, I think.
Incredible.
Which is really nice, too. So eventually I kind of got the hint that maybe I need to start shaving an extra bowling ball off. So I started walking and dieting and really enjoying it and doing well with it. Enjoying it facetiously, but enjoying getting healthier, right? And so we're out to dinner with my parents, and obviously we're talking about exercise and food all the time now. And my dad mentioned that he had to run an 8-minute mile when he was in the Air Force.
Hmm.
And I pretty much laughed at him, like, 8-minute mile? Are you gonna walk a mile in 8 minutes, Dad? No, you can't. It's pretty hard. And I'm like, 8 minutes? This is what's protecting. This is what's protecting my freedom is people that can run an 8-minute mile. And then of course the wife is like, oh, well, you think it's so easy? Why don't you do it? And I'm like, oh, I could do that in my sleep. And she's like, with no training. I'm like, well, I've trained. I've been walking. She's like, walking is not training. And I'm like, 8-minute mile, no problem.
Now, I love your mother. That was such a great comment. It's exactly what I said to you too. I can't believe it. It's like almost identical. That's awesome.
We just had a little beatdown. The wife is like, all right, prove it. You know, you run an 8-minute mile, and I'll buy you some new athletic shoes. If you can't do it, you buy me some new athletic shoes. And I'm like, all right, I feel like I just hate taking stuff from my wife, you know. But yeah. And that's what it's going to be. So I put the challenge out on Facebook, and 2 days later, I got up, stretched, beautiful day. 9 minutes, 44 seconds later, I'm kivvying on the ground at the finish line.
Oh, man, 9:44. That's
only
brutal.
Victory I can claim is I did not walk at all during the mile. And that took every ounce of fat man power I had not to do that. So.
Oh, man. Congratulations on embarrassing yourself. At least you didn't have about 1,000 people, you know, tuning in and listening and watching like I did. But and I won, so, so I didn't feel too
That's
bad.
That's true, but Facebook definitely is a powerful medium these days. So, you know, I think the listeners who are my Facebook friends are probably going to chuckle out of the motivational poster that I created to
that was very cool. I think I shared that with the Annie Up database, actually. I think I sent it out to like 4,000 or 5,000 people, and that was a great photo.
But yeah, I did a guest spot on the CPO Poker podcast last night. I'll talk a little bit more about that on the next show. But they actually, hey, how's the diet going? And I'm like, yeah, the diet's going great. It's the exercise. It sucks.
I couldn't agree more, man.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, after I recovered from that and got out of the hospital, one of our poker room managers, one of our favorite poker room managers, gave me a ring, and he's like, you know, hey, Scott, I'm thinking for my next tournament series, think about doing something a little crazy, a little out of the box, and I want to see what you think about it. And so, you know, I asked you as well, too, and we weighed in, and I think it's an interesting interesting topic. So what he said is, you know, because of the scheduling, he wondered whether how players would react to the main event of his series being the first event in the series rather than the last one, which I kind of sort of like the Daytona 500 in
that. Yeah, I thought the exact same thing when he mentioned it to us.
Yeah, you know, the Super Bowl of NASCAR, first race of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
And then finish with the rest of the series. Now, obviously, he said, you know, he'll do plenty of main event satellites leading up, so, you know, people still have an opportunity to qualify. And again, he said because of the schedule over the holiday weekend, he's pretty confident that the main event would still draw very strongly. But want to know what we thought. And I think you and I both had similar first reactions, didn't we not?
That's correct. I mean, again, we don't know what players think. It was just you and I have been in the game for a while, and we've talked to a lot of managers, and we've run results to a lot of main events and series and stuff like that, so we kind of know the pattern of things. And we both thought, you know, a lot of players like to think of the main event as something to aspire to during the week of undercard events. You know, maybe they'll win an undercard event and be able to play in it. It doesn't have to be a satellite. It could be any other event they play, and there's sort of a buzz, too, that goes all week while people are playing in the actual series. You know, hey, the main event's coming up, and, you know, let's say if it was an Annie Up Poker Tour event or something, they'd be like, hey, you know, the cover and all that. There's sort of this sort of buzz that goes all week long, whereas if you start with the main event, you might get people who will just come in for that and leave, and you won't be able to capture that audience or that money or, you know, that revenue, because they'll come in for that one event they like and leave rather than coming in early and playing cash games or maybe an undercard or two. So my first reaction was very similar to yours, that I'm not sure. I think there's a reason why they put the main event at the end. And they did it with all the other bigger events, too. A lot of the series, if they have, you know, they'll have, like, the $2,200 buy-in event 2 days before the main event or 4 days before the main event, you know, because people are sort of aspiring to get to that level of how much they have to buy in for. And they kind of group them together, too, so that way the players who can afford those larger buy-ins will want to be able to play them all during, like, a calendar week or something. So I don't know, my first reaction was just like yours, though. I think it's tough to put it at the beginning because you might be losing a larger part of your audience or player pool.
Yeah, I think those are all good points. I mean, and when I'm going to step back, as I often do on this, you know, I start to think, you know, does it sound weird just because no one does it, or no one ever has done? Maybe somebody has done, I don't know. I can't recall anything.
Yeah, I don't recall it, though.
So, you know, anytime there's something different, I think there's this immediate, that just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't mean it's not right. So, we told him we would float it out here on the show. So I kind of want to hear what our listeners have to say about it, you know, whether there are positives to doing something like that, depending how it's done. We already put it out on Facebook and Twitter, and already I think the reaction is pretty clear. We're quite ready for this experiment.
Yeah.
Let us know. You know, give us shoot us an email, ring the hotline, go on the Facebook page and let us know, and, you know, we'll pass on the feedback to this manager.
Can you tell me what you think a positive could be from doing it this way? Do you have any?
This is one of these tough questions. Yeah. In the sense that it all depends on how the whole event is structured, I think.
Okay.
You know, if you're just in the air talking about this, of course it sounds like it couldn't work. But, you know, if you've got steady satellites for 2 weeks ahead of it, And it is, like you said, on a holiday weekend where you already got a big crowd and you're trying to capture people. You know, it could work. I know that's not what you're asking. You're asking for a positive.
Yeah, right.
And,
because even that doesn't really solve a problem. I think the problem we're talking about is after you do the main event, you lose everything after that. I'm not worried about filling the main event.
Well, let me ask you this. That makes perfect sense, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but obviously there's a lot more money in the main event. You know, let's assume that it's going to be a, you know, somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 buy-in or something versus lead-up events that are going to be $100 to $300 or something, I'm going to guess. You know, if people are able, if the satellite structure is very aggressive where people can take a shot at, you know, $100 or so to get into the main event, several opportunities beforehand, you end up getting a really big field for the main event because of that satellite structure. And then you've got, let's say you get 400 players for it, maybe. Mm-hmm. Just picking numbers out of the air here. That's 40 people that are going to have a good chunk of change that then they could plow into the events afterwards, if they're so inclined to play them. Mm-hmm. And so it could work in reverse. But obviously grasping at some straws here.
Right, because really the hole in that theory is the fact that you had 400 players that had $1,500 in their pocket now, and they could have used that money during the week and still made money to qualify for the $1,100 or $1,400 or $1,500 event at the end.
True.
You know what I mean? So I can't see the reason behind it, because the other thing too is we'd have to ask this manager, do you feel like your main event would attract the same amount of players at the beginning of the week as it would at the, or at the beginning of the series as it would at the end of the series? Because if you're still going to attract the same amount, then there's really no point in doing this.
Well, that's a scheduling issue, which I believe is what the...
Right, I'm just saying,
we talk about this on the show a lot, that there's just so many tournaments out there these days, that trying to find a hole in the schedule is really difficult, and I could be wrong, but I believe that's what's driving this. And he obviously has a backup plan, too, so, I mean, he's not screwed either way. But,
right.
But you know what's interesting? I mean, some of the early comments on Facebook, and I think you might alluded to this, too, were that, you know, players are going to come in for the main event and then leave.
Yeah.
Which is true, but at the same time, I think that happens no matter what the tournament series is. You know, if you are a $1,000 to $1,500 player, you generally aren't going to come in a week ahead of time and play these $100, $200 events. You know, you're going to arrive, the main event starts on Friday, you're going to arrive Thursday night and play and then leave. So I don't think you're losing players like that way. I mean, it's a wash. And again, if you're talking about scheduling, maybe those players were already going to go to another tournament on X date where you would put your main event, and now you created an event that would attract them on a dead weekend where they don't have anything else, you might get more of those players than you would the flip side. But at the end of the day, I think it's one of these things where it's, you know, players are just going to have to get comfortable with it being different.
Yeah. Hey, one of the things that we should tell managers who ask us questions like this is to make sure they schedule their main event start day, if it's a 1 or a 2 day, on days where flying in 2 days before is cheaper, or 3 days before is cheaper, because that way it forces them to want to fly in a couple of days early or something. You know, they save enough money by flying on what day's the best day to fly, Sky?
Well, Tuesdays and Saturdays are always the cheapest days to fly.
Yeah, so if you can get them to fly in on a Tuesday because you're having your main event on a Thursday or a Friday, you know, or a Saturday, you know, or maybe, you know, I mean, or Sunday, you can get them to fly in a couple of days early or something like that. You know what I mean? You always wonder about that. But I guess you start at the beginning of the week, that's not good. You want people to have the weekend, so maybe you try to schedule, like, we're flying in on Tuesday is ideal, but I'm not sure if that's possible. I don't know if you want to have a main event on a Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday would be kind of weird. Yeah.
Friday might be okay because everyone knows the weekend started and they can stay out late if they're workers and if they do it for a living, then they might fly in on a Tuesday and play cash games. You know, they'll be capturing that audience. But it's an interesting question. It's an interesting thought. You know, I don't know if it's something that is trailblazing or if it's just because you said scheduling is forcing him to do this, and he wants to know what the reaction will be. So we'll see what I'd like to see if the Antioch Nation will email us or call our hotline and let us know at podcast@antiochmagazine.com or 813-448-1120. I'd be interested in hearing what they have to say.
Absolutely, and we definitely want to get the Andy Up Nation involved in this next thing, too. Really enjoyed our J-Design playing cards over the years. Yeah. You know, I keep thinking back to that first time that Dr. Frank brought the deck to our home game.
Right.
He's like, hey, look at these new cards we got. And I'm like, wow, those are pretty sweet. And he's like, yeah, they're real durable. And, you know, I've still been using that same deck in our home game for years now. I think I probably need to swap it out. So, but it's a great great deck of cards. So anyhow, we quickly got to know the owner, Jason Hawley, and deemed them the official playing cards of Anti-Up Magazine. We use them on our Anti-Up Poker Cruises. Just have a lot of love for him, another small business out there, and he's trying to launch some new lines of cards, and he's going to the Kickstarter to raise the cash to do it. And if people aren't familiar with Kickstarter, it's one of these micro-funding sites that have popped up. There's lots of them now, actually, where you can go and put a project up there and get people to donate, you know, as little as a couple cents, I think, or at least a few dollars. So rather than going out and pleading your case to the big rich angel investors, you can you know, get friends and supporters to chip in a little bit to help you see your dream come true. And so that's what he's doing. So for folks that are inclined to help him out and not putting any pressure on the dozens and dozens of people that have won J Design playing cards on this show, but
for free.
If you're thinking about maybe giving back, this might be a good project to give back a couple bucks as a thank you to Jason for sending you those wonderful cards, which I'm sure you're enjoying. Again, no pressure. Go to Kickstarter.com and search for his Kickstarter page, which is the company's called J-Design, but you're going to need to search for it under D-E-S-J-G-N. Very artistic. He places the I with the J.
Right. So it's the word design, except for instead of an I, it's the letter J.
Better way of saying it.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
And donate what you can. A couple of things about the new lines. The first new line is this classic Victorian, he's calling, which are poker size with a jumbo index.
Ooh.
Our older cruise passengers love those.
Yes.
Which is going to be me within probably 4 months. Another line features a new index called the Blackjack Index, which is a medium size index between the regular and jumbo. I think it's a little. I like that. Because, you know, the jumbos for me are hard. I like when I peek at the cards.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like the jumbos. When they're actually on the flop, I love them.
Yeah.
You know, I can see them from space. But so maybe something in between. I'm really interested to see those. Those are also poker size, and it has a new back design he's calling Classic Damask.
Hmm.
And then both these lines will feature 8 back color options. 2 of them have been announced already. Dragon, which is red, and Griffin, which is blue. Next 2 will be replaced. Will be Gargoyle, which is slate gray. And Phoenix, which is orange, and of course we got more colors to come. We'll update you on his progress, but if you are so inclined, please go to Kickstarter.com and support our good friend Jay Design.
Something tells me Jason is a fan of the Harry Potter books or something. I don't know. A lot of those terms seem to come from those movies. So. All right. Well, we got a hotline 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it, we give. Here is Jody from Norman, Oklahoma.
I'm glad you guys are coming to Oklahoma, but I'm a little upset you didn't have more limit events on there or any limit shootouts. I don't think you'll put it on the podcast. If you do, I'll see you there in Oklahoma, but I'm not happy you didn't put enough limit events. Or the cash games are going to be what it's up here, and I'm tired of that, and I hope you can try to get some better cash games like Stud 8 or 10-20. Thank you. I can't wait to see y'all.
Okay.
I would venture to say there are more limit events in this schedule than any other schedule in the history of mankind. Or very close to it. I'm not sure what he's asking.
Yeah, I guess maybe he's asking for limit hold'em and not just limit in general.
Yeah.
Because, again, I mean, I didn't go back and count the events, but aside from the main event, I think there's only like 2 or 3 no limit events on the schedule. The rest are all great variations of games that are all limit.
Yeah.
And there is at least one limit hold'em event on there. So, I mean, obviously, maybe if that's what he's talking about, yeah, I get it. I certainly appreciate the call and the concern. But for me, I mean, I got to tell you, I've never been more upset at my scheduling of an Andy Up Poker Cruise than I am with this one. Because I would have loved to have been out there for that entire downstream event playing all those events. I mean, you just don't see too many rooms that put together a schedule like that anymore.
No, I think it's a fantastic schedule. And really, if you're looking for limit hold'em events, you're not going to find them in any series, much less this one. Yeah. This one at least gives you a bunch of different varieties of limit events, you know what I mean? But no, just a limit hold'em, you know, thumb through our magazine and look at all the ads that have series on there and tell me how many have limit hold'em on them. You might get one a series if you're lucky. If you're lucky. Yeah.
And then follow up and look in Antioch Magazine a month or two later and see the number of people that enter that limit event.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really kind of the problem now. And, you know, I've had a lot of chats with managers traveling because it's amazing to me how many of the managers in this country are limit poker fans.
Right.
You know, there's not a lot of them that are just jonesing for no limit. They're like these closet limit guys. And they're the ones that are in control of scheduling these events. And but they also have to, you know, report to the bean counters.
Yeah, they gotta please the masses.
And they know that, you know, running too many of these generally doesn't work. I'm very excited to see how the downstream works when you put them all together, because then it becomes a crowdsourcing event to get limits in there. But that's generally what it is. I mean, in terms of cash games too. I mean, again, I've never met a manager that wouldn't spread a game if he had enough people. You know. Any game that they're allowed to spread, any limit. So, you know, I think it's easy sometimes to pick on the room or the manager and not being able to get cash games going. But, you know, what I try to encourage people is, you know, hey, get a couple of your buddies together. Go in there and say, hey, we've got four here that want to play 10-20 limit hold'em. We're willing to play shorthanded. I bet you they get that game started and even, you know, cut the rake for you. And then once it started, that's when people started walking by and going, hey, all right, 10-20, I'm in.
Yeah.
So, you know, not throwing all this all back on Jody, because I appreciate the call and certainly understand the frustration. But, you know, if you can take some leadership on it, I think that's going to certainly help. And certainly after I get off the cruise and I get out the downstream, I'd be happy to play in a game like that. So you've got one. Two counting you, so find us two more, and game's on.
Yeah, right.
All right, Jody, we appreciate the call. Again, that hotline number is 813-448-1120. Call that, and we're going to give you something great. Like, we're going to give Jody the download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store, and you'll be happy to know that Chinese poker is a limit game.
Mailbag! Ever Clark writes in today. He says, I would love to join one of your cruises just for the teaching aspect you offer. You have so many great people come aboard and offer great sounding classes. However, I don't have the time. I am quite jealous. This is one area that I don't have the opportunity to learn from pros or in a classroom type environment. My question is, have you guys ever thought about recording the sessions and offering them online? You know, sort of YouTube-like videos. Antioch Magazine Online Learning. He said, I do realize that a charge would apply. I get 10% cut. Ha ha.
Very fair.
I know you guys don't have enough to do. Recording, editing, and uploading videos would help those of us that don't have a reliable source of learning in our own backyard. Just a thought. P.S. Please don't reply that I should visit each individual's pro's website. I have no interest in visiting a dozen different websites. I'm already busy enough.
With 3 exclamation points.
Yeah.
That's very busy.
Well, Everett, here's what I have to say real quick, is I think that you should probably go to the websites of these pros and take a look at what they have to offer, because there's some really good stuff there, and I'm sure you have plenty of time to, if you have time to write this funny email, and listen to two idiots on a PokerCast to talk about this stuff, you could probably spend some time. No, just kidding. I actually have thought about some of that stuff. I don't know if we wanted to get into that whole recording and then getting into that whole charging people to do it and stuff. But at the same time, we're trying to do this to encourage people to come on the ship. And if we can give them an option to see Jonathan Little or Lee Childs where they don't have to come on the ship, then we might be losing other business to start a smaller business that might not make as much business. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I responded to Everett with, I know you told me don't reply with this, but I really think you should visit each individual pro's website. And, you know, I was being half funny, but, you know, I'm not being funny. I mean, it's really the best way for him to get what he wants. I understand, you know, he's busy, he doesn't have time to go to a dozen different pros, but we've had three pros. you know. Yeah. And if the ones that we have on the cruise are the ones that he seems really interested in, Lee Child, Jonathan Little, those folks, that's two sites to go to. So it's not a lot. You know, a couple things I guess I'll say about this. On our side, obviously, you mentioned, you know, obviously we do this to get people to come on the cruise. I mean, we certainly don't make money bringing pros on the cruise. We probably lose money doing it, but yeah. We do it because we like that atmosphere and be able to give people an opportunity to learn that way. So, you know, recording is not great from a business standpoint. But, you know, I kind of want to speak to this thing about, you know, I do realize a charge would apply. One, I appreciate the fact that he realizes that, you know, we're not just... can't just give that stuff away for free. Mm-hmm. I thought about this, and you know, there's so many online training options for poker players now. You know, it's not just, I mean, a lot of pros have their own, and then there's companies that do it, and you know, they're not really all that expensive, I don't think. I mean, it's been a while since I've checked, but you know, a lot of them are monthly subscriptions. I think probably as little as $20 a month or something. So if there's so many of those out there with so many different videos, I mean, here's the other thing. If we would record all the classes that we've had on our cruise ships, we would have like 10 videos maybe.
Yeah.
Over 3 years.
Yeah, maybe a few more, but yeah.
A little bit more than that, but yeah. And these other sites have hundreds of videos, and they're charging, let's say, $20 a month. What could we possibly charge that would compare with that?
Yeah. And all the effort that we'd have to do and to start the site and all that too. Just
well, yeah, not even that, but obviously that's a big consideration. I'm just thinking from a consumer standpoint, what are you going to do? Which would you rather do? Go to a monthly subscription site with hundreds of videos, updated every month with new videos for $20, $25, $30, $40 a month, whatever it is, or go to any magazine where you have a total of 20 videos to choose from at what, $1? Each, maybe $2 each.
Yeah.
From a business perspective, I just don't think it's not so much how much money we can make off of it. It's whether anybody sees any value in that.
You know, the other thing too is the logistics of it. Like, imagine us recording our classes. It's a lot of interactive stuff within those classes, so. It's a nightmare trying to make sure that you can hear the question from the person in the back row, and then you don't know what the pro is answering, and then you might, you know, I mean, it's just, it's not, whereas the videos that are made on these teaching sites are made specifically so that you will understand every single thing they're talking about, hear everything they're talking about, see everything they're talking about. Our video classes would not be that way. It would be more frustrating than anything to you. And don't forget, too, that these are all just smaller, boiled-down versions of what they are hoping to teach you later on in their paid courses or, you know, to get you hooked on that, but while still giving you enough knowledge that you feel like you got something out of it and why you came on the cruise. So, you know, I just think that you're right. I mean, I know it sounds funny to say, hey, sorry you said don't go to these websites, but you really should. And I joked about it in the beginning, but really, you are going to get more value from doing that. And if you're going to take the time to watch our video on YouTube, it's a 2-hour video of each one of these guys. Why wouldn't you just take the time to do the 2-hour video on, like you said, we only have, of all the pros that taught on our site, we've had like 4 or 5 people who've taught on our cruises. I mean, only 2 of them have websites, I think. So, I mean, really, you're not like you're scouring the internet trying to find all these people who are on our cruises. It's 2 guys. So I would think that that's the way to go.
A couple things I'll say to close this out. I mean, one, Jonathan Little did videotape all of his classes on our last cruise.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you do go to flipthetern.com, I mean, you will see those if you decide to become a member of his. I believe Lee maybe audio recorded some of them. I'm not sure how he used them. But and then the other thing, obviously, I'm not trying to turn this into a please come on a cruise, because you know I everyone was just like, you know, hey, I'm in school, I have 2 kids, you know, going on a cruise is a luxury for me. But if it's not a luxury for you, I mean, the other thing is kind of separating from the class is just being in close quarters with a pro for the entire cruise. you know, our pros come and play in the room. They go to our parties and stuff. They've always been very approachable. So, you know, people can come up and ask them questions, and they always, you know, are happy answering them. So, I think you got to think of the pro experience on our cruises in more than just, okay, free 2-hour class here and then two more 2-hour classes here. It's really, you know, an entire week of learning from someone.
Yeah, yep. Dinner, everything. It's just a great time.
All right, well, I'm sorry we couldn't help you out with training, but we are going to help you out somewhat with training. We're going to send you Pot Odds Made Simple. That's a seminar from poker instructor Thomas Gallagher, which can be downloaded to any mobile device. Other listeners can get their own by mentioning Ante Up at poker911.net.
Very cool. I've got a call the floor from Tommy Huang, and I think he's cooler than us. I get that feeling that Tommy's a cool guy.
Well, two reasons. One, his name is Dragonfish.
There's one.
I can't even compete with that.
And then the games that he plays in his home game are just killer. And,
these are awesome.
I just love this guy. So he says, in one of our home games, we played 2-5 No Limit Hold'em until midnight, and then we played Dealer's Choice with games like Big O and No Limit Omaha High Double Flop, and they call it 42. See what I mean? They got nicknames for their games. I mean, these guys are just way cool. They're like the cool kids at the lunch, you know, and you can't sit at their table. It's too cool. He's also got the same No Limit game, but No Limit Hold'em Double Flop with 3 cards. They call that 32. And then when it gets shorthanded, they'll increase it to 6 hold cards. And even add games like Limit 6-Card Hold'em and 6-Card Stud High Low, where you make 2 stud hands with the 6 cards and can play both hands, but you need to put in 2 bets to play on both. So it's just crazy stuff.
I love it.
So he says, well, late into the night, I was dealing and called No Limit Omaha High Double Flop with 6 cards, or 62. And after he dealt 2 flops, a player bet $80 into a $65 pot.
Since I had, overbet.
Since I had top 2 pair on one board and a 16-card nut straight wrap draw on the other, I called. After I dealt both turns, the other player checked. I went to recheck my cards. It's hard to remember all 6 cards and both boards. To see if I wanted to bet, and only saw 3 cards. What the hell? He says, I thought I might have picked up the burn cards by mistake, but there were only 2 burn cards out. I looked around and did not see anything else that could have made my hand. Or could have been my hand. I had a moment of panic, not unlike when you lose your kids for a second in a crowded area like the mall. He said, then I realized the turn cards looked kind of familiar. That's when I realized that I had dealt the burn card and the turn cards out of my hand instead of the deck. You see, when you play with 6 cards per hand and 2 flops, your hand and the remaining deck become similar in size. Call the floor! What do you do in this situation? Since it was a friendly home game, the host decided I should get the cards back, deal a turn, and have both players check since the other player had already checked, and then deal the river. I ended up with Broadway on one board and top 2 pair on the other. I was going to bet, but the other player thought that the host had said check it down all the way. Since it was a friendly game and I'm the one that messed up to begin with, I checked. It turned out that the other player had the exact same hand and we chopped anyway. I have seen a lot of strange things during my poker playing, but this is a doozy, and I'm the one that did it.
Obviously, we're not going to bug Jody on this because this is home game on steroids. Call the floor here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean stop us from deciding what to do. I'll be Judge Joe Brown. You can be Judge Judy.
Okay.
I wrote back to Tommy with this. This is tough. I don't really know what you do with this thing. I said on one hand, obviously this is a dealer's mistake. So I can make a case for killing Tommy's hand and awarding, I guess there's other people in the pot, right? And letting it play out. Obviously, that's a tough way to lose $80 plus whatever else you have in the pot. But on the other hand, I'd like to think that in a friendly home game, the other player would offer a better deal to you. I think that's usually what happens in our game if something like that would happen. No one's out for blood in that sense, I don't think.
Right.
But if not... I don't think I could have decided how they ended up deciding to win. You know, taking the cards off of the board, putting them back in your hand, and then dealing out new ones. I believe that's what happened here, right?
Yeah, he put his own cards into the boards, and they pulled them back, gave them to him, and then continued the hand out with the real deck.
I mean, I guess at that point you are playing at a disadvantage because people know the cards in your hand. Although with six cards in your hand and 100 cards on the board, and now you got to remember the six cards that are going back there, and I don't know how much of an advantage it really is or disadvantage it really is. I guess that's what it. I mean, I don't know.
All right, here's what I have to say. A couple of things. One, I think I agree with what they did, and I agree with the check it down the whole way thing. I think there have been situations in casinos where this kind of thing wouldn't happen in a casino, but similar things in casinos like this happen where players are all in, or their hand get exposed by accident by the dealer or something like that, where no more action can happen because of the situation that arose from a dealer mistake or whatever it is. Right. So I think that this was a great ruling, because we have to admit, we are not professional dealers in home games like this. We are forced to deal these hands. And in the confusion of there being six cards, in the confusion of there being two flops, in the confusion of you having to keep track of the action as a dealer, in the confusion that you deal with your left hand and you just happen to have your deck, your hand, whatever it is, these things can happen. And I think that if they're your friends and you're playing in a friendly home game, like he mentioned a couple of times in his email, you really shouldn't make a guy lose $100 because he was the dealer. You know what I mean? He made a mistake, and it was an honest mistake, and I think checking it down the rest of the way is cool. And I realize people may chime in now and say, but the other guys didn't do anything wrong, they're being punished.
Yeah, right.
They might have wanted to bluff on the river because it's no limit, you know, or something. And I feel bad about that. And yeah, maybe there could be an angle shoot somehow where you realize that you can't win this hand because somebody called your $80 bluff, so you deal your own cards and go, oops, you know. But really, does that really happen in a friendly home game? If it does, then it's not a friendly home game anymore. And so maybe, you know, you think twice about your game. But in this situation, I think it was the right call. I really do. I really think it was an honest mistake by our friend here. And I think that the other guys saw that, realized that. Nobody wants to deal their whole cards and then expose them and then have to play the rest of the hand. So I feel like it was the right thing to do. Now, again, we couldn't bother Jody with this, but I did want to bring up the fact that California rooms used to be dealer your own stuff.
Tough, yeah, right.
So I wondered and this might have happened back then somehow. Maybe.
Sure.
I don't know if they had six-card games where but they might have played stud or something and they picked up the... But no, because even then your whole cards would be down and your other cards would be covering it probably. But still, I wonder if there's a California poker room manager who's been around since the day and had something like this happen back then. But that did happen. Because I was saying before that would never happen in a casino because there is no dealer your own, but there used to be. So,
yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, I will close this by my usual suggestion to folks in this situation. Is when you get to this point, have the dealer sit out.
Yeah.
And then you don't have this problem. I mean, the dealer screws up at that point. I mean, well, this problem would absolutely not have happened because there wouldn't have been a hand to deal from. But it also takes the dealer out of the equation. And that's, to me, the toughest part of this situation. And, you know, whenever we get home game calls, it usually is because the dealer is a player and he's involved. And, you know, that makes it tough at that point because then, you know, you don't really have an independent auditor at that point. But obviously they're starting to play this crazy game when they got shorthanded, so I don't think you want to go even more shorthanded. But
yeah, it's like, okay, play by yourself.
But that is the best practices, I would say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if you can't do that, then yeah, I think you do need to have a strong home game where you can resolve these situations. Peacefully, and I think it sounds like they do. So obviously I know these guys, they were on our Baltimore cruise and crazy. I'm not sure why they didn't introduce these crazy games to me on this ship, but I would have loved to play.
Well, you know why?
27 card hold'em.
I know why. Because you're not cool enough to hang out with Tommy Wang.
Yeah, that's it. I am not a dragon fish.
That's right, you're not cool enough. That's why he said, I'm not going to let you into my cool guys club.
All right, Tommy, we just gave you some swag a couple weeks ago, but everybody else, send your call to Floors to us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com. If they are casino-related or just not completely dragonfish crazy, we'll have our poker room manager, Jody Russell, answer them and get... and then if we do, and use it on the show, we will send you something great, like a copy of the ebook You Called Me With What? By Rick Danford, which is available for just $1.99 on Amazon.com. You know, I love that I have an easy laugh with you. There hasn't been a time that I did that you called me with what that you haven't chuckled.
It's hilarious. I just know that you're going to say it that way. It just cracks me up.
I've got a couple of those with my wife, too, and I'm like, you know what? As long as I know, I tell her this all the time, as long as I can make you laugh, I know you're never going to leave me.
You know, if we're at the home game this week, because we have a home game scheduled, and somebody calls you and turns over crap, I want to hear you say, you call me with what? I want to see how many guys laugh at the home game, because I know I'll be laughing. Speaking of the home game, you know, Dr. Frank, for some reason he gets mentioned on our show like every week now. I don't know what the deal is.
He likes to push our buttons.
So he wrote in and said, it's our feedback section here, and he says, you remember the recent call to floor when Joey described two instances when players died at the table? He said, our good doctor wants us to remind our
listeners. Isn't him talking.
This isn't him talking to third person, you know. Yes. I mean, chocolate.
Essentially, here, let me take this over here. You messed up feedback by doing what? All right, so anyhow, the good doctor, he just wanted us to remind, as a, and I really do mean good doctor, actually great doctor. How about stupendous doctor?
Yeah.
He definitely wanted us to remind our listeners that if they suspect a player has died, it's best to call 911 immediately and to use a defibrillator if one is available. He wrote a column not too long ago suggesting that poker rooms install them. They're very inexpensive, and obviously if you save one life, it's certainly worth it. And of course, he's an ER doctor, and he says obviously in the ER, they exhaust all possible means of saving a patient before declaring them dead. That's always good to hear. And that a poker player or dealer may not be the best judge of whether a player is actually dead. And when he initially said this, started this conversation with me, I'm like, well, Frank, the guy was dead. I think the dealer is just trying to be discreetful. Discreetful? Wow, I just committed that. Wanted to be as discreet as possible and not cause an uproar. And he's like, yeah, Scott, but how does he know he was dead? He's like, we've seen people in the yard that just, by any, 10 out of 10 people would say they're dead, and they're not. And that's just not a determination a dealer should make. So that actually hit home, and that makes sense. So as much as we enjoy those stories of dead people at the table, the reminder from the doctor is to do what you can to make sure that this person does not expire on your watch.
Hey, I'm going to chime in here and say that a dealer can tell me when a hand is dead. Why can't he tell me when the rest of the body is dead as well? Sorry. All right, thanks for rescuing my feedback reading there. For some reason, I was entranced by Dr. Frank Toscano's name or something. I don't know. But all right, so hey, don't forget, Antia Poker Tour running Aces Harness Park near Minneapolis will host the Antia Up Midwest Championship and Antia Up Poker Tour Series April 11th to the 21st. And our good friends from Fifth Street Radio will be broadcasting live from the main event. More information can be found at antiupmagazine.com/runningaces. Also, Downstream Casino Resort will host its Four States Poker Championship Antiup Poker Tour event May 17th to 26th and has posted its schedule at antiupmagazine.com/downstream. More details on all AUPT events, including the Antiup Poker Tour World Championship, can be found at antiuppokertour.com.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to both these events. Just finally booked my trip up to Running Aces, so hopefully we'll see a lot of listeners out there, but I'll be there for the main event April 19th through the 21st, so stop by and say hi.
Cool.
And of course, don't forget Walt Strakowski Jr., Antiup's 2010 Player of the Year and a single table specialist, will be the pro on our May 20th Antiup Poker Cruise out of Miami, which will spotlight sit and goes. Rates are no longer guaranteed, but call us as soon as possible so we can get you the best rate possible before the ship sells out. We're also sailing out of New York City and Tampa this year, and get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Naples, Fort Myers, Greyhound Track, and Palm Beach Kennel Club by visiting antiupcruises.com.
And, we've expanded our Antiup store. The number of logo items now is just incredible. We have jackets, shirts, hats, and much more. And consolidate all of our shopping items, subscriptions, single copies, cruises, and products from our trusted partners. And it's all now on one website, antiupmagazine.com/shop. That's kind of a cute way to sum it all up, right? Shop. Because that's what you're doing. You're shopping for some cool stuff. Hey, last week...
Hey, I want to give you a little... I want to let you have do a little I told you so.
Okay.
Here.
Okay. Okay, cool.
You know, because when we when I first created the Antiup hats, I had that that little retro mesh hat that I like.
Yeah.
That you disparagingly call it a trucker hat.
That's what they call it.
And they sold, I think we sold a total of zero of those. And already our new era mesh caps, which are really sharp. You could get yours tomorrow. Which, by the way, the cat has been enjoying it. So
thanks. I'm gonna get it Saturday since that's when we're playing our home game.
Saturday. Yeah, broom it off a little bit before I give it to you. But that's been the most popular item so far in the shop. So
yeah, very good. I told you so. you know, last week we had so much news that like nothing happened this week. So there was no news this week. I don't know why. maybe we're not paying our reporters enough. I don't know what it is. But we have no news this week, so we get to wrap up on O'Malley's move instead. Let's refresh our memory with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $1, $2 PLO8 game. This table is loose and can get a bit on the aggressive side. We sit with $300, down 50, but with an average stack. The under-the-gun calls, the MP calls, and we're in the cutoff at this six-handed table with the King of Clubs, King of Diamonds, Five of Spades, Four of Clubs. We've got no nut draws either way, and perhaps the pair of kings suckers us into making this call, but we do. The button folds, some good news, the small blind folds, and the big blind checks. With $9 in the pot, we see a flop of the Jack of Diamonds, Three of Hearts, Deuce of Clubs. Not the flop we were looking for, but really then, what were we looking for? The big blind leads out for $5. The under-the-gun folds, but the MP calls. Interestingly enough, both these players are new to PLO 8 and have a tendency to play way too many hands. We've got both of them covered. Unfortunately, we don't quite know their range in this situation, so we call. With $24 in the pot, the turn is the 10 of clubs. The big blind pots it, and the MP calls. What do we do?
All right, kids, gather around Grandpa Long here. I'm about to spin a yarn. but no, seriously, I love Omaha 8, so really, be patient here, because I just love talking about Omaha 8, and particularly this hand, I think it's very interesting. So, I think there's tons to consider here. So, first, our outs. We have one golden one, the Ace of Clubs, which gives us nut-nut, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Any of the other three aces gives us the nut-low, and it's unlikely to be a shared nut-low. So that's nice.
Yeah.
Though it's possible that up to three aces are in our opponent's hands. That's not very nice.
No.
Any club gives us the second best flush, which seems nice, but can often be dangerous in Omaha 8. Can't tell you how much many people lose in Omaha 8 with king-high flushes. Three of the four sixes gives us the nut high, which is unlikely to be shared. So that's awesome. Especially since it also makes a weak low for us in case our opponents really are as new as O'Malley says. Also, an outside chance that one of our two remaining kings could scoop it for us if neither of our opponents had ace-queen. So that's our outs. Now, what are our... again, I think this is why I really love Omaha 8. It's just incredibly tough to put people on hands in Omaha. And here's why. You know, the big bind...
The big bind... Ate a lot of yams before the game. The big bind.
The big blind is probably betting a set or two pair, and the other player is probably on a low or a flush draw. So if we're right on that, we have outs to all of them. But the problem is, it's impossible to figure out whether each opponent has backup in his hand. You know, so I mean, even though we think that, they could have some other cards that end up hurting us. So all told, I think we're looking at betting $24 to win between 36 and 72. So I don't think we have the proper odds to call now. But at the same time, I think I might go ahead and bank on some implied odds of our opponents, putting more money in the river regardless of the last card. Again, he's saying that these are new players, so, you know, they probably don't realize that this is a nut game of the nuts. And so because of all that, if anybody's still listening, I think I'm ready to gamble because I believe I'm confident knowing what to do on any river card and any action from it. So obviously that river card is going to be very key.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you done talking? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so
I'm
the show.
Sorry,
oh,
it's just so much.
Oh, the show. That's right. I forgot. That's what we're doing. All right. You know, I wrote here, Scott loves to hear himself talk. So he does. And I'm folding. Odds aren't there, like he said, especially since we need one very specific card to make nut-nut. And the second nut flush is what scares me the most. Fold O'Malley. That's what I say. Because I feel like if we bet 24 and really only did get 36 out of this, you know, to win 36, it's just a horrible, horrible call. And even in the implied odds, you know, even if they, how much are they going to bet on the river that they're going to bet when something scares them that makes our hand? So I'm just going to fold and probably find that's a mistake. But let's hear part two.
Hello again. There's $72 in the pot, and we have to call 24. That's 3-1 on our money. How many nut outs do we have? 3 sixes? Any ace? Of course, king-queen would get the high, but the ace of clubs gives us the nuts both ways. So that's roughly 7 outs to the nuts, but 3 of those aces give us the nuts only one way. We make the call, but it's a crying one. With $96 now in the pot, the river is the 6 of clubs. Not sure how we feel about this one. But suddenly the big blind checks, and now the MP makes a weak $20 stab at the pot. He should have bet more. We're going to make this call, as does the big blind. The MP shows the king of spades, 5 of hearts, 4 of diamonds, 3 of spades, for the same low as us and a weaker high. We show our hand, and the big blind rolls his eyes and mucks. We quarter the MP and move on to the next hand. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, try to find that soft seed every once in a while. You could make a killing. I hope to see you on the felt.
Oh, apparently I've said enough.
I agree, though I think I still would have folded. So, but the question I did want to ask you was, they bet, what, 10 bucks or 20 bucks? Did you think that would have been enough if you add all that money together to make that $24 call now?
Well, I believe...
to win 3/4 of the pot.
Actually, no, I was going to say, I thought that we would have closed out action, but we wouldn't because the big blind's behind us.
Yeah.
But also, if the big blind checks on the river, you know, I'm pretty much assuming that he's either going to fold or call. So I guess essentially, it's like we're closing out the action. Yeah, against weaker players, I'm probably going to make that call.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm playing against real Omaha players, obviously I would have never gotten the situation to begin with. I would never play this hand from the beginning and never would have played it on any of the other streets.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a completely different story. But
okay. But
yeah, against weaker players, I mean, this is kind of why I really enjoy playing Omaha 8 at like that 4-8 level or 3-6 is that that so many of the players really are really truly bad at Omaha 8. You know, they have so many cards in their hand. They see all these possibilities. They stay in with stuff that they shouldn't have. They get excited with non-nut hands, and you end up making a lot of money off of that. So,
yeah.
And sometimes that means making some borderline calls like this because you realize that they think they're way stronger than they really are. So, yeah, I just heard myself talk a lot more. Every year, Anti-Up is proud to be a sponsor of the Deep Stack Charity Classic at Daytona Beach Kennel Club in Daytona Beach, Florida. The charity event always attracts 600-plus players with thousands of dollars in added prizes, including all-expenses-paid trips to the Venetian Las Vegas. This year, the featured pro player is Antonio Esfandiari, the leading tournament money winner in the history of poker after winning last year's Big One for one-drop $1 million buy-in tournament. Antonio joins us today to catch us up on what he's been doing since that big victory. Thanks for joining us, Antonio.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Excellent. Well, let's start by talking about this Deep Stack Charity Classic. How many charity events do you do these days, and why is it important to you to do so?
Well, I believe that I'm very fortunate in the life that I live, so anytime there's a charity opportunity, I try and make it work. My schedule's a bit hairy, so I can't do as many as I'd like to, but I'd say probably one every couple months at least. So it's good to give back. Makes you sleep good at night.
That's really cool. You know, the Deep Stack Charity Classic's the biggest one in Florida and probably one of the biggest ones anywhere. Is there any strategy advice? Because a lot of our listeners will be playing in this event. Do you have, like, any kind of advice for deep field charity events?
I mean, look, every situation is, you know, every time you're at a poker table, it's a new situation and it's a new puzzle, basically. So how you unfold the puzzle is really up to you. I can't give you any general advice. Just play good and understand your table is really all I can say.
Okay.
Excellent. All right, well, speaking of charity, perhaps no charity event has received more exposure than the big one for One Drop, which you won last year for a cool $18.3 million. Has it finally sunk in?
Yeah, it actually has kind of sunk in, and it feels fantastic. I don't even know what else to say. It's kind of like, wow, it happened, and what's next? And it's just so, it feels so good that it's kind of overwhelming in a bit, for a little bit. But yeah, no, it feels fantastic. I'm very happy.
Well, you know, minutes after you won and that really unique bracelet, you gave it to your dad. Did he keep it, and where is it today?
That's a good question. It actually broke the night that I won it.
Wow.
It broke on the on one of the ledges, or the hinge, and so I gave it back to them to fix it, and I just got it back a few days ago.
Holy cow.
It took that long for it to get fixed, but it's all good. It got sent back to Robert Mill, and he fixed it himself. Something like that. So I'm pretty happy. And no, it's in my dad's safe.
Okay.
And that's where it's going to stay probably. I've never worn it, just the night I wore it. But it's actually a good question, because I actually wrote about this in that, you know, I think it's kind of cheesy when a player wears their WSOP bracelet when they go play poker. But this bracelet is so unique and one of a kind that people really want to see it. And so my question is, if I wear it at the World Series for a couple of events, will I be that guy?
Well, it's funny you brought that up, because I always thought that too. I always thought it's kind of a little bit garish for people to wear it. But at the same time, you know, we've been in places where players actually want to see it. They're actually disappointed if you don't have it with them. So yeah, I think you probably might be that guy. But also, there's going to be a lot of people that really want to see it. So you're probably doing a good thing.
Well, you know, the thing about that bracelet too, it was sort of fashionable. I mean, it reminded me of a Swatch. Remember the Swatches years ago? I don't know if you remember those, but it kind of reminded me of it. But it was fashionable. I mean, the other ones are big and beautiful in what they represent, but I mean, that was sort of a different bracelet. So I don't know if you'd be that guy wearing that, because it was pretty fashionable.
I might have to wear it just for you.
All right, well, the big one event is taking this year off, though smaller events benefiting One Drop will be held at the World Series. But the big one will be back in 2014. Have you already committed to defending your title?
I mean, I don't know if I need to commit, but I mean, I'm playing in it. So. There's no way. I'm the only guy that can win it twice. I can't not win it.
Okay, well, let's talk about the World Series a little bit. We know it's 2 months away, but have you sort of charted out how many events you plan to enter, that kind of thing yet?
No, I mean, the World Series is kind of time, you know, we as professional players, we just know that that's the time to really get at it. So during the World Series, I'll be playing every single day, super focused, and all I'm going to do is play poker. So how many events I play kind of just depends on how things are going. I'm going to play every event that I can.
Okay.
So, you know, I might have a couple of deep runs and not play a couple of events. Who knows?
Well, let's hope you have plenty of deep runs. But any highlights on the for you on the schedule? Obviously, the main event always is. And do any of the new offerings this year interest you?
I haven't really looked at the schedule. I'm pretty excited about the two little one-drop tournaments, the 111,000 and the 1100. That's kind of cool. But I haven't looked at the full schedule, but I'm sure they always cook up some cool new tournaments, so I'm excited.
Yeah, one question we had on the show is, how many people do you think are going to be rebuying in that 1100 one, which is the big focus of it is unlimited rebuys for a long time. Is that prize pool going to get pretty big?
Yeah, I think you'll average probably a total of 1.5 or 1 rebuys per person, probably. I'm talking like every single player. So
right,
if you get 1,000 players, I think you'll get at least 1,000 rebuys.
Well, you know, we asked you what you were interested in, and speaking of that, you know, you've won 3 World Series bracelets, a couple of WPT titles, and the first time that I interviewed you, which is probably like 2008 or so, it was for our show back then and for the magazine, you had said that in life you always want what you don't have, and once you have it, you desire it less. Is there anything left for you to prove, and are you losing your desire at all in poker?
No, it's actually gone up, and there's a whole other factor to that equation, and that is delivering pain. And I know that when I succeed, I hurt other poker players, and vice versa. So a little sick part of me just really loves to deliver that pain, especially to Phil Locke, really. So I'm actually really, really hungry to win and even do better. I mean, I almost won the freaking WPT in San Jose last week. I took ninth.
Yeah.
Pretty sad about that. But anyway, I really, really, really want to win. It's really strange, you know. I've had some great success, and life is good, and my career is good, but I just really want to continue winning. So before I have babies and can't travel as much for poker, I'm going to do what I can to punish.
Well, certainly you're doing a lot of traveling coming up, I understand. I believe you're shipping out to England, I believe it is, tomorrow, and then you got some other events before you get back here to Florida. Can you run us through what's coming up on your schedule here?
Yeah, I'm going to the UK tomorrow for Premier Poker League. It's some invite-only $125,000 buy-in tournament. Then I come back and doing some cool stuff with Phil for something that I don't want to speak about until it's done, but there's a potential something cooking between Phil and I that you guys will see if it happens. And then after that, I'm going to Australia for the WSOPE. And then Coachella, and then hang out for a little bit, play the WPT main event, I mean the championship, and then I'm going to come see you guys and then go over to Monte Carlo for the EPT championship, and then come back for the World Series of Poker.
Man, so you're a rock star.
That is, yeah, it's quite an aggressive schedule there. Have you learned to adjust? Obviously, you must have. Or how have you learned to adjust? I mean, that's back and forth across the world a couple times here in 2 months.
Well, how do you sleep?
You just melatonin, thank God.
I take three a night.
That stuff, you know, the jet lag really gets me.
Yeah.
As much as I travel, you'd think you kind of get used to it, but jet lag absolutely crushes me every time.
Me too.
So it takes me a couple days to adjust, but you just do it. You know, I know that before I know it, I'll have family and some kids, and so I won't be able to do this much longer. I'm 34 now, so I got to start thinking about the future.
Wow.
So when that day comes, you know, I want to watch my kids grow up and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So I won't be able to travel as much. So I'm just kind of getting it all out of my way, getting it all out of my system.
Well, you know, you brought up Phil, and we know you're no stranger to television. You know, you had the show with him, I Bet You, and you even had a guest spot on Entourage. And I hear you made your movie debut as an undercover cop in Freelancers. Is that right?
Yeah, I never even saw the movie.
Yeah. are you trying to make movies because you want to get in better with Phil Locke? Or what's the deal? And how long will it be before you start acting seriously and win an Oscar?
Phil is one of my best friends, so I don't really need to get in better with him. But it wasn't that I pursued getting a movie role. It was just that I played poker with, you know, a guy who was a producer on the movie and said, hey, you want to be in the movie? And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? I know it'll hurt other poker players when they see it. So, so I accepted.
All right, I can imagine it's not being easy being a magician. Of course, I don't know any tricks, so I'm just guessing. But it has to take as much dedication as poker, if not more. Do you still keep up with it, or do you still have a few favorites you hang on to?
Yeah, I have. I haven't learned a new magic trick in probably 10 years, but I have the ones that I learned from a long time ago that require some moves that I spent years practicing, and I kind of have those with me. It's kind of like riding a bike. You just kind of have it. Now, I'm not as good as I used to be, but I still do okay. So yeah, I still do magic for friends and certain people I meet here and there. Not as often as I used to, but here and there, yeah.
Now, my father-in-law is a very successful magician. He was in the Circle of Magic, the IBM, all those things, and He taught me how to do the pass with the chip from your thumb muscle up in the air like you do. But that took a lot of work, and that you have to keep that muscle strong. Is that still second nature to you, or is that something that you'll always have?
Once you train your hand for a certain sleight of hand move, I believe that you just have it forever.
Okay.
So, yeah, I can do the muscle pass, no problem. And if you learned it, you should be able to, too, no problem as well.
And how often do people, like, at the table ask you for chip tricks or magic tricks, and do you mind when that happens?
No, of course not. I mean, no, not at all. Okay. It happens quite a bit.
All right, Antonio, we know you got a busy schedule, some planes to catch, so we don't want to keep you any longer. Definitely appreciate you joining us. We'll definitely look forward to seeing you at the Deep Stack Charity Classic May 5th in Daytona Beach. For our listeners want more information on that event, please visit deepstackcharityclassic.com. But best of luck overseas, Antonio. Any parting words for our listeners?
Yeah, you can catch me on Twitter at Magic Antonio.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Take care.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
Totally digging this week's Hand of the Week, Chris.
You're digging it.
Comes from Vic G, and he has his own poker blog. I guess there's a place called My Poker Blog where I guess you can just blog about yourself. But he sent me the link to it, and so it's all formatted nicely. It's all in order, so if anything is screwed up, it's all on me this time.
Okay.
Can't blame can't blame Vic for it, right?
Okay.
And Vic, if you remember, he's the guy that collects all those chips.
Yes, of course.
He's got a nice little picture there. We featured him, so. All right, so this is a 2-5 no-limit hold'em game.
Okay.
A little bit above my pay grade, but we'll muddle through.
Okay.
And so you played this at the Venetian Poker Room out in Las Vegas. Gorgeous room. Really love it out there.
Yep.
And it's 10-handed, and he has a stack of just under 1,400. I'm sure he means just less than 1,400, but that's all right. you know, isn't it funny how much I mangle words on the show and then I'm still correcting people's grammar?
Yeah, you're terrible.
The audacity that I have.
Yeah, if I spent all day correcting you, we'd never end the show.
All right, so just less than $1,400 and he's in middle position. So we have a couple calls, and now it's on us with seven of hearts, seven of clubs in middle position.
Love a call here. Do I have to say more than that?
Nope.
Okay, I love a call.
Set mining, right?
Yeah, of course. Set mining, playing for lots of money, have lots of money in front of us, could really try to bust somebody with it. So let's call and flop set.
A couple callers in front of us, so it's probably going to be a decent pot. And or if somebody gets crazy and raised, then you know there's no reason for us to put bad money before good money.
Yeah, let's call and see what happens.
Good money before bad money.
Whatever. Yeah, we're not going to correct you for the rest of the show, like I said. It would take forever. So let's just move on. We call.
All right, we call. Got a couple folds. After that, two more calls, and the big blind raises the 30.
Ooh.
One of the players in between us folds. One calls, and it's back to us.
I'll call. Now you know you can pretty much put this guy in a hand, so...
Yeah, it's going to probably flop big, right?
Yeah, so if you flop big and he doesn't, we're going to get a lot of his chips, probably.
Okay. Well, our hero does call. The remaining players fold, so I believe we are three-handed. And this is what our hero said. The big blind is one of the wild players at the table who seems to raise every pot and take shots with questionable holdings. With two limpers in front of me, I decide to set mine and just call the $5 with my pocket sevens.
Right.
Sure enough, when he gets back around to the big blind, he raises a 30. And then he says, the villain in this hand is a solid local player. He calls, and so do I. So, a little foreshadowing there.
Okay. Well, I agree with everything he's done so far. Not that he's looking for my validation.
No, no, of course.
I'm just saying that to move the hand along. I agree.
All right. So three to the flop with $105 in the pot. Flop comes seven of diamonds, ace of hearts, two of clubs. Pretty amazing flop for us.
Ricky Tikki Tavi.
And what I like about this, obviously, it's a set that's great. But I also like that the ace comes.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to think one of my other two opponents has an ace, and probably both of them do. And and hopefully, preferably, one of them doesn't have two.
Right.
But the fact that they have the ace on there as well, too, which means we're probably going to get a little more value out of our set than we normally would. All right, so the big blind, remember, he's wild crazy, bets $75, and the other player calls.
Wow. This is a great time to raise. I know a lot of people might say, oh, let's slow play because we got a set and there's no real draw out there. It's rainbow, and really somebody's not doing this with a wheel draw, so let's just call. But when you have somebody leading out for 75, and then you have somebody calling for 75, one of those players, if not both, hit this ace, and they're not going to go anywhere. One of these players is not going anywhere, at least. Why not raise now? Why wait till somebody picks up something on the turn, and now it's too late to get them to fold because they've picked up two pair that could, you know, if another ace comes, you'll get a worse full house, you know, or something like that, or they get up a redraw or something. So I would say let's make a raise here. I don't know. I would probably make it like 225 to go or something like that, and just see what happens. I really feel like somebody's got like ace king here or ace queen, and they're not going to go anywhere. Maybe they will. Maybe I'm making a mistake. Maybe I'm betting too much. But I really feel like one of these guys would come along if I made a nice raise here.
And I think by making that raise of that size too, I think you really are masking your set. I don't think, you know, a lot of people would put you on a set raising on this particular board like right. that. So that's the other reason I really like it. And you're likely to get more, even more money out of them later on, particularly if they have something like ace king or if they hit their two pair.
Yeah, because that's another whole level there. That's like level three or four there, because you're betting, knowing that, thinking that they don't think that you could possibly have a set because you're betting out now, and they wouldn't think that a player that came along the way you did would raise with a set because there is no conceivable draw here, so why would you do that? So that's like level three there. So I would, I don't know what level it is, to be honest with you, but I'm just having fun with you. But really, I think that's another good reason to do it, you know, because most players wouldn't think that you would raise with a set there, you know. You might raise with ace king there, you know, or even two pair. But if somebody has a better two pair, you know, if they have ace seven right now, they're not going anywhere. You know, right. If they have the K7 in their hand with the ace. So I would definitely enjoy a raise here. I don't know how much, though. I think 200, 225, something like that sounds about right to me.
Okay, our hero raises to 150. You know what's weird about that? It's a min raise.
That's
min
raise, yeah.
Significant amount of money, but I think the min raise, people realize when it's a min raise.
Yeah.
You know, if he would have bet like even like 165 or something, I don't think you think of it as a min raise. I mean, obviously it's not, but I mean, you're kind of telegraphing some mid-raise. At that point, there's a couple of antennas that go up, you know, some hair on the back of the neck that's like, why just a mid-raise here? It almost screams to me that this guy has a really good hand.
Yeah.
And that's what's so weird about poker. Again, like I said, if it's 165, 175, or 200, like I said, now I'm not thinking that. So the last thing I want to do is give anybody, you know, even one little hair on the back of their neck that we might have a monster.
Or you could bet, like Scott would, and bet 149 and stack up a bunch of white chips.
Actually, I don't think you could do that because you have to raise the minimum. So.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Or 159.
Yeah. Or 154.
but really, the 150 is something that could send up flags and make people concerned. So why do that? We're trying to make them not think anything about our hand other than they can beat it. So I wouldn't min-raise here.
Our villain in his hand calls. It doesn't say anything about the big blind. Oh, I'm sorry, the big blind did fold. So, we're heads up against the villain now.
Okay, I like that. I mean, I like being heads up, but it's weird that the min-raise probably scared the big blind.
Well, yeah, I get this guy that's kind of crazy. You know, he's just figuring, hey, if no one has an ace, I'm going to bet 75, I'm going to take it down. Oh, we got a caller and a razor. Oops.
Yeah.
I'm done. Paramutuals, table six. All right, so this is what our hero said about the flop. He says I flopped top set. I'm not quite sure about that. You flopped a set, all right.
Middle set.
And happy to see the big blind lead out for $75. When the villain calls, I suspect at least one of them has an ace in their hand. He says the big blind will probably fold to any raise. Both players peg me as tight, so they'll be reluctant to call a sizable raise, so I min-raised to 150, and that gets the big blinds out.
Yeah, so the big blind didn't have anything. He was trying to take a stab at a pot that was raised and called by a couple people, and you know, he was the guy who showed the aggression pre-flop, so he probably had something like 10s or something, and realized that he was beat by that raise or in the call. So that's what happened there. So that makes sense.
I'm not even sure he had 10s.
No, I know, but I'm just saying.
He had two cards, I think. But
well, I mean, he had a lot of people. We had a couple calls before he made that raise. I know he was wild, but yeah, okay. So maybe he had he could have questionable holding, like he said.
But regardless.
Yeah, regardless, he's out. So.
But I am interested about his assessment that the players take him as tight, so they'll be reluctant to call a sizable raise. Again, I think, I don't want to rehash what we just talked about, but I think at that point, I mean, any raise, if you're tight, is going to concern them, I think.
That's probably true, yeah.
So I think making a sizable raise actually makes it seem like you're not as strong as you really are, as weird as that sounds. And yeah, if they're not going to call a min raise, then they're not going to call a sizable raise. So I don't think you're really losing any value by betting a little bit more.
The question now that comes up is, I didn't know that they thought he was tight. But if they thought he was tight, and then he limped, and then called a big raise to 30, and then raises here when it's kind of a ragged flop.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't have limped with an ace if he's a tight player. He would have raised with it in his hand. And he didn't. He limped with an ace and then called 30 bucks. If he's tight, he must be set mining, I would think. So that might have given away his hand if he was a tight player. I didn't realize that they were thinking he was a tight player. So I don't know. If I had known that, I might have played his hand differently. Maybe I would have just called on the flop knowing that they thought I was tight. And but then again, what hand am I calling with? You know, it's weird. What hands could be calling here? It could be a weak ace, really, or not the best ace. You know, I mean, but it could be a set that's waiting to pop the turn before anybody can really make a hand. So, I don't know. This is a real difficult situation. Now that you know that they think he's tight too, I don't know if there's a right move here. You know, if you bet too much, they all fold because they know you're tight. If you don't bet enough, you're letting somebody catch up on the turn, possibly. You know, somebody could have like 9-9 in their hand and turn a set bigger than yours. You know, so you're letting a lot of. You know, if you just call along, you're letting them set the price for hitting a hand on the turn. You know, who knows? This is now it's tougher than it was.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I would have raised more probably, but, you know, we'll just deal with it. We're heads up now, and we'll just deal with it now.
All right, heads up to the turn. 480 buckaroos in the pot, and the turn is the 8 of diamonds. So our board now is 7 of diamonds, ace of hearts, deuce of clubs, 8 of diamonds, and our opponent checks to us.
We have to bet here. Because now the guy has, like, you know, ace-king of diamonds. You know, now we're screwed. Or even ace-deuce of diamonds, two pair. But if he had ace-deuce of diamonds, he would not have checked. Ace-king of diamonds probably wouldn't have checked either, I don't think. Maybe a weaker hand like the Cosenza, you know, ace-ten of diamonds or something. Because if he has...
But I don't think our villain at this point... We're playing off the story that we're being told here. If you know, if I'm the villain and I know and I have this guy pegged this tight, and I have ace king in my hand, at best I think I'm splitting the pot right now with this tight player.
Yeah, I would never even think because pre-flop action, if he was tight, he wouldn't have just called
ace
king.
You know, I got to think he probably. Well, again, I mean, I don't know what he could really put us on that it's worth calling because there's not a draw there. So it has to be, I'm going to guess that he's probably like a big ace and just hoping that he can pick up a second pair on us.
Yeah, because...
And that didn't happen here. So and so in that case, I guess, right, if it's like a big ace diamonds, now at this point, if that's how I'm thinking, I'm obviously still behind here then because I didn't improve, but I got closer to really improving. I would probably want to keep this pot as tight as I can right now.
Yeah, it feels like a weak suited ace because he limped preflop under the gun plus one.
Right, yeah.
Now, to me, who would do that under the gun plus one and then call a raise unless it's a weak suited ace? And then now, because if that or a set, and if he had a set, why would he have checked? because he wants to protect his hand on the turn. So I would think that on the turn, by checking, he has a weak suited ace, and he's afraid of a bigger ace, which is why he's checking to try to control the size of the pot, hope the hero will check behind and get good showdown value. So I feel like it feels like a weak suited ace now. You know, it just really feels like that, because why would he check? You know, if he had a set, he wouldn't check. He'd want to protect it. If he had a big ace, you know, he would want to. He called the bet before, so he would be confident in his ace. I think ace eight and eight at the end isn't going to scare him. So I feel like he's not protecting his hand for a reason. Like he's scared. So I think I would bet.
All right. Well, our hero bets $325.
That's a nice bet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good bet. I mean, Any draws are going to pay dearly if they somehow have like ace ten of diamonds, and any weak ace, you know, may have hit two pair there on the end, but and then check to trap, you know, who knows. But I feel like he's protecting his hand here. I don't know if he's betting 325 to protect his hand, or he thinks that he can get 325 odd of this guy. But I am afraid of an ace of diamonds and then any other kicker with a diamond. That's kind of scary. That's the kind of hand that could call.
Yeah, I think the eight's unfortunate for our betting line in terms of value. I mean, it forces us, I think, to really bet here.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, maybe the guy folds. And really, I'm not going to be upset with taking the $480 pot here. But obviously, I want more. So I would have preferred a different card to come on the turn.
Yeah, if it was a spade or eight of spades, you know, I might considering just bet a little bit or checking to try to make him bluff at it on the river. But now it's just crazy.
All right, well, our villain does call, of course, because it's the end of the week.
Yeah.
And this is our hero's analysis. It's like, where does the villain hold with no flush draw on the flop and only an unlikely gut shot straight draw? I put the villain on an ace. They flopped aces up. I have to worry about them improving to a bigger full house. While the turn shouldn't have added any straight draws, it does bring a possible flush draw if the villain is holding ace six of diamonds.
Yeah.
The 1 in 3 chance that his ace is a diamond. And then around a 1 in 4 chance that his kicker is also a diamond. I'm hoping he just had a big odd suit ace and hit his kicker on hits his kicker on the river. I don't want the villain to fold, but I want to grow the pot, so I decided to bet 325. And apparently, the villain thought for a short while before calling.
Okay, well, what could he be calling with unless he made aces up or he does have that diamond draw? You know, he backed into this diamond draw. He reluctantly calls because I think if it's a spade, you know, it'd have to be two pair for him to call, and it probably has to be top two. It'd be like ace eight, but it feels like it'd be like ace of clubs, eight of clubs for him to have done that. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess there's an outside shot that he does still have an ace and is still hoping to hit his second pair and think that's going to be good. Although it's a pretty hefty price to pay for that.
Yeah, that's tough to hit a three outer.
But here's the thing with a tight player, you know, you're probably going to get that money. So. And it's tough to get money out of a tight player.
Yeah.
So sometimes you gamble a little bit on that option. But I think it's a very small possibility that that's what's happening. All right, so we go to the river heads up with $1,130 in the pot. And the river is the queen of diamonds. So our final board is seven of diamonds, ace of hearts, deuce of clubs, eight of diamonds, queen of diamonds. Of course, the flush gets there. And, of course, the villain bets $860, which is all in.
Oh, man. Brutal. This is the worst card ever. Worst card ever. Oh, man. I don't put him on like a set of eights or a set of queens, obviously. So, really, it's the flush or nothing. You know, or it's the flush or aces, I mean. So.
Or it could be ace-queen.
Yeah.
And that outside thing that. I was talking about, it's just possible that he was sticking around with ace queen and now hit it and it's not worried about the flush because he couldn't put us on a flush draw. And
I just can't see somebody putting that much money in on one pair and hoping to hit two pair and now doing it and then shoving with two pair against a tight player. I mean, I guess he would think, yeah, I can get him to what hand would a tight player have that could call there with just ace queen? If you have aces and queens, what hand do you think is going to call $800 with if he's a tight player? Ace King? There's no way Ace King's going to call there if you shove on a tight player. So I don't know what hand he thinks he beats. It has to be diamonds.
You know, I think that's excellent. The fact that, again, obviously this is coming from our perspective.
Yeah.
Of us thinking that they think that we're tight, you know, maybe they don't. But if they really do think of us as tight, and they make this bet here, it's a terrible bet.
Yeah. If we can win with it.
Have to call because of it. It's just in their mind probably thinking, you know, hey, I bet so big this tight player is going to go away. But it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't add up.
Yeah,
you know, I guess maybe, again, we're on that next level. And again, this is 2-5, and I don't play a lot of 2-5. But, you know, I guess that next level above it is, you know, hey, if I shove here with my flush, he can't really think that I would do that with a flush. So I'm going to get called, and then I'm going to get a lot more money than if I just put a small bet in.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we're asking diamonds. A lot of our villain at that point.
Yeah, screams diamonds. All right, what happens?
All right, our hero says, I did not want to see the board pair or diamond hit the river, of course. When the diamond hits, the villain moves in all in rather quickly, is using the diamond as a scary card to get me to fold a better hand. I have him covered by only $16 and decide to make the call. He announces that he has the nuts and tables ace-jack of diamonds.
Oh, man, that's exactly it. Brutal.
So our hero says, looking back at my bet sizing, I should have raised to 275, 300 on the flop, and then moved in on the turn.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, on the turn, I guess. But you know what, though? You have to specifically put him on two diamonds to do that. And you're hoping to milk this guy. You were talking about it earlier, saying you're hoping that he has, you know, ace that, you know, is pretty good and can come along for the call and stuff. So to say now that you should have shoved on the turn, that's just results-oriented, trying to protect the hand that you know about now.
I mean, shoving on the turn, you lose so much value.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously,
flop
we hated to see this card come, but on the river, but, you know, I'm not going to sit here and do the math. I'll let Gundam do that for me. But it's unlikely. I mean, we just, variance caught up here. Unlucky, you know.
Yeah.
Because the thing, we also had the set, too, so there were some, a couple dimes that could have came that wouldn't have hurt us. It's just unlucky, I think. So, I mean, the shove on the turn at that point, now you're playing scared at that point and just trying to take down the 480 because you're worried that a couple cards might come that are going to cost you the spot. Yeah, I don't think you can play that way. You know, it just, he got unlucky. He made, as I said, turns out to be a really good bet on the end because we really didn't think that he could make that kind of bet with the flush, and we called, and, you know, touche to him. The villain really...
Man.
Really did well in the river. I don't know about the rest of the hand, but certainly had us fooled.
Yeah, that's interesting because I don't know if I could make that $325 call with ace jack of diamonds on that turn. Maybe I could because it's a nut flush, but you know, I guess I could. I guess I could.
Well, now knowing that, I mean, he also could probably count the jacks as outs. I would think again, potentially as outs.
Yeah.
Again, if you take the line that I said that, you know, hey, he was just trying to hit two pair thinking that we had something like, you know, an ace king or ace queen or something. Though we didn't raise preflop, so that makes it tough too.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before. Yeah.
But even that, I mean, even if we had like something like ace seven, ace deuce, I mean, he still has outs for a better two pair to us. So, and that would make sense with us not raising.
Yeah, dude. Man, brutal. Sorry, Vic. That's a brutal hand.
All right, Vic, I believe we've sent to you something recently, but everybody else send your hands of the week to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And we'll send you something great like a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Ask about the Antiup logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping.
I'd like to thank the magician Antonio Esfandiari for joining us on our show this week. Always fun to have him on. And wish him the best at the World Series and, of course, at our upcoming charity event. So I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Antiup is a production of antiupmagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.